Presses Play.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Girl Presses Play, the movie podcast where we talk about films, what we think about them, and what makes them so damn great. I'm your host, Alana Rafferty. Get comfy, grab some popcorn, and get ready, because we're about to press play.
And now for our feature presentation.
Hello, everyone, and happy almost Turkey Day. I hope you are preparing to stuff your bellies, stuff yourselves to the gills, and be in a food coma by 4 p.m., which that may or may not be my plan. I will neither confirm nor deny that I plan on just eating all day. But to segue, there is also another activity that is in quite a few people's holiday plans. Sports. Lots and lots and lots of sports, especially football. I will be the first to say that I have nothing against professional sports, but they're just not my thing. I've never really enjoyed like sitting in front of the TV, watching the game. I can never understand what's going on, which I think is a huge part of it. I respect everything professional sports players do and the people that watch them. I totally respect them, but just not my bag. Oddly enough though, I do love sports movies. And, oddly enough, there are plenty of other non-sports people like myself in the world who love sports movies, too. Because, honestly, name me one millennial who hasn't clapped or cheered during Denzel Washington's speech in Remember the Titans, or a dad who hasn't cried during Field of Dreams, and I will give you a prize of some kind. But what makes sports movies so great and universally loved? I believe that it's really about the fight and the struggle and the passion for doing what you love, which is always in a sports movie, is something that everyone can relate to, whether you want to be a professional football player, a teacher, or a singer. You know, I think those concepts everyone has gone through and can really relate to. So today, we have an awesome guest star, Rich Stambolian of the Mad Men podcast, who will be taking a look at Rudy and Fighting With My Family with me, along with a couple of other awesome sports movies like 42, Rocky, and A League of Their Own. Needless to say, there will be some mild spoilers for these films. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, because it was pretty awesome.
Courtney tells us that you're all wrestlers.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad. To prove to everyone
prove
that I work.
What?
You see this guy here staring back at you?
Yeah?
That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
All right, so our guest today is the co-host of the hit wrestling podcast, Mad Men, and now hosts the upcoming movie podcast, Film Class Zeros, with Alex Kalaganis. He is also a photographer and an awesome guy. Girl Presses Play is very pumped to welcome Rich Stambolian to the podcast. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. Hello, ma'am. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the invite.
Thank you for coming on the show, sir. So I guess we'll start with the very basic question of this episode, which is, why do people love sports movies and not just people that love sports? Because I feel like, you know, people who are really interested in the world tend to like documentaries or with movie musicals, like people who love movie musicals love them. But sports seems to be like pretty universal.
I'll agree with that. I'm going to preface my answer by saying that I'm not exactly John Q quarterback over here. You know, I'm not... Like, I'm not Joe America football at all, you know, which is fine. But I think well-done sports movies have so much heart. And I really think that that jumps off the screen to anybody who's watching, you know, like a good example would be like, listen, like my wife's not super into sports. I'm not super, super into sports, but a good sports movie, man, forget it. Like some of that stuff will bring tears to your eyes. You'll feel like a swell of emotion in your chest. And there's so many good sports movies out there that, you know, you can kind of throw a rock and hit any good one. But there's also, that being said, there's also a ton of bad sports movies out there that do nothing for you.
That's very true. And I also feel like sports movies is one of those Like, you forget how many sports movies there are. Because even trying to whittle down just to, you know, two or three main movies to talk about, I was like, oh, wait, there's A League of Their Own. Oh, wait, there's The Replacements. There's Hoosiers. Yep. There's Remember the Titans. There's 42. There's, like, all these movies. And I feel like sports movies, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like sports movies kind of, the tentacles go into a bunch of different other genres, like the bio movie, the comedy, like, if you want to count Jerry Maguire as a sports movie, it's kind of like a romance sports movie.
I agree with that. It's also like you have a movie like Moneyball, for example, like that I would throw that definitely into the sports genre. Another one of my favorite quote unquote sports movies, I'm doing air quotes, even though this is an audio podcast, like an army. One of my favorite sports movies is this movie called The Fan, that was directed by Tony Scott, starring Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes. And I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but it's...
I've never even heard of this movie, but that's just... it sounds like such a heavy hitter already.
Pun intended. So like, your movie is Robert De Niro plays this really obsessed fan of Wesley Snipes, who's like this superstar baseball player. And, you know, you have the sports aspect of it. Tony Scott does such a great job directing where you believe the realness of the characters, but also like it turns into like the psychopath is after Wesley Snipes, you know, Wesley Snipes' character. I'm not going to give away the reveal because the reveal in the movie is really, really good. But, you know, when we're done here, if you have the taste to see a sports movie that's not really, I guess, sports centric, you'd probably really dig it.
Ooh, I do. It almost sounds like Taxi Driver, but if Taxi Driver was about football.
That's a good way to put it. I think, like, I bet you have you seen The Cape Fear with De Niro?
That's one of those movies that, and I feel like this is a really weird subset of movies that I don't know if I created or is just an actual subset, but movies that would come on TNT on like a Sunday afternoon or a Tuesday at 6 p.m. before like your primetime show comes on. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that movie, the Robert De Niro Cape Fear, I've seen in bits and pieces and I've seen them out of order, but I've never just sat down and watched the movie. But I could tell you like the beats, you know, Counselor. I could tell you all those like big moments.
Okay, I thought you were going to say I put that movie in the category of movies that make me uncomfortable.
I mean, it does make me uncomfortable, like the whole thumb thing. I was just like,
whoa. Oh, the thumb thing. Yeah, the thumb thing's crazy. So like I was going to say like The Fan is kind of like Cape Fear, but with baseball in a weird way, because they kind of came out like not around the same time. But like,
oh, it's baseball, not football. Gotcha.
It's baseball. Yeah. So it's a very similar trajectory where like this guy's nuts and he's after this dude, kind of like Cape Fear where he was nuts and after Richard Gere.
Ooh, a question I didn't think of actually until you brought it up. What makes a bad sports movie? Because I feel like I haven't seen too many bad sports movies, but I definitely can think of like one that could have been a whole lot better.
Well, what was your thought on that?
For me, it's Varsity Blues, because it feels so much about, like, it doesn't actually feel a lot about the game or the struggle. It's more about the fact that, like, I feel like football was kind of replaceable, if that makes any sense, because my friend Sydney, who was on the dance episode, she actually brought up a good point about what makes a dance film. She says, I hate when it's something like Black Swan, where it didn't necessarily have to be ballet because it wasn't about it. It could have been like chess or like, I don't know, it's Shakespeare competition. Like the ballet was interchangeable to what the story was about. And I kind of feel like that with Varsity Blues. I also feel like the women in that movie just had nothing to do.
I think the Varsity Blues is arguably a very popular, not great movie.
Yeah, that's it. Like it's popular. It's one of those, oh, if you like sports movies, you should watch it, but it's not actually a very good movie.
Rocky V. That's my pick for not that great of a sports movie.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because you have the underdog story of Rocky up to Rocky IV. They're all fantastic. He's beating the odds. And then Rocky V is stupid. You know, like that could have been like you could have taken Rocky out of that movie and put anybody in it and it would have been just fine. You know,
is Rocky V the one with the son with the guy from This Is Us, or is it the Drogo one?
No, Rocky V, his son is in Rocky V, but it's not Milo Ventimiglia. That's Rocky Balboa. Rocky Balboa is fantastic. That's a good
sport. Oh, gotcha.
Rocky V is down on his luck Rocky, and the climax of the movie is a street fight with this dude named Tommy Gunn in the movie. And it's awful. Ooh. It's stupid. It's so stupid. It's so, so stupid.
Wow. I was thinking Rocky IV, because as beloved as that is, it sounds like also one of those, it's not a great movie. Like, it's very pro-America 80s, let's take down the commies. I think there's a talking robot at some point that, like, takes care of the kids, Jetson style.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's awesome. It's I think, like, Rocky IV is the epitome of Cold War nostalgia, if you watch it.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And at the time, I think, like, that movie said a lot about the climate of the era. But if you watch it back now, it holds up in a weird way. But at the same time, you're kind of like, ooh, this is very black. There's no subtlety in that movie at all. There's no shades of gray in that movie. It's very much like Rocky's American, Ivan Drago is a Russian, and they're fighting each other. And then Rocky wins over the Russians at the end of the movie through the sheer force of his American will. And then they're like, oh, maybe this guy's not so bad. And then Rocky's like, oh, maybe you guys aren't so bad either. You know? And that's how the movie ends.
Well, again, it's another one of those, like, it could have been about, like, competitive freestyle rapping or something, right, as long as he was defeating a Russian. So and I actually should also note, and I don't know how other listeners feel about this, just because it's a bad sports movie doesn't mean it's not enjoyable to watch, like a Rocky IV, where it's so 80s-tastic, but it's still really fun to watch, and you're not sitting there going like, ugh, when is this over?
You nailed it. I think there's a fine line between, like, this is terrible, but this is amazing. I like plenty of dumb, terrible movies, you know, like, believe me, like, I could talk for hours about every single Transformers movie that's probably made me cry, but they're still enjoyable. And I think, you know, like you were saying, to kind of bring it back to the sports thing, it's like a bad sports movie just makes you not care and you wish it was over, you know, because there's nothing more boring than sports you're not into and seeing statistics that you don't really care about, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, actually, another one that kind of makes me think of Rocky IV is the Van Damme film Bloodsport. Ooh, which you could argue is more of a fighting or a martial arts movie, but I do feel like there is that sports element of the odds are against him and he's got the feds coming after him and he's just got to win this. And then at one point he becomes blind and and yes, it's like very clear from beginning to end he's going to win the Kumite, but I do feel like there's a little bit of that sports movie underdog element, just like enough of it to be a sports movie.
Well, also, like, the thing with Bloodsport is it's kind of based on a true story.
Kind of, sort of. They won't see me doing air quotes either, but kind of, sort of.
Kind of, sort of. I think it's the same thing with Rudy, where that is based on a true story also, but the truth is stretched, like, just a little bit, you know? Like, according to the actual Rudy, he said 92% of that movie is true.
Okay, that's not a bad percentage. I'm sure that other 92 is like, we combined a character or two, like we combined a couple of girlfriends to make the Lily Tomlin character. You know, we kind of fast forwarded a little bit here and skipped over another part. But yeah, Rudy's really interesting too, because I was thinking about this, and I think it's why I thought of Rudy and Fighting With My Family, because I feel like they're two movies that really talk about the element of privilege in sports. Like, can your family afford to send you there? Like, what kind of sacrifices do you and your family have to make in order to be able to play the sport? Because I just remember that scene where Rudy, I forget exactly what happens, but he can't really afford to stay on campus anymore. So then he ends up sleeping in the janitor's quarters.
That whole thing, I feel like, adds to the heart of the movie. And it basically was, in a nutshell, he wasn't smart enough to get into college. But because he really wanted to play football for Notre Dame, he educated himself to the point that he got into the community college that was like the sister school, I think, of Notre Dame, right? Then he got a job as a janitor and kept telling the head janitor, who was also like a gestalt of a bunch of characters in this guy's real life. And his name was Fortune in the movie, played by Charles Dutton, who I will always call Rock because of the TV show. But like he's the head janitor, and like he sneaks in, he's sleeping on the cot in like the janitor's break room. He's taking a shower at the other school, and it's because he saved all his money for tuition because he comes from like, I don't think it was a mining town. I think it was like a mill town, you know? Yeah. I think it's a steel mill town, and it's in Indiana.
You're right. Indiana. Yeah. That would make sense.
So I think he, like, in the beginning of the movie, they established, like, you can get a job at the mill, you'll be there with your family and friends, and everybody's going to look out for you. Where else are you going to get that? Stop thinking about going to college. And it wasn't even so much as, like, we can't afford to send you to college, but it was like, who do you think you are to even want to go to college, especially Notre Dame, because we watch them every Saturday on TV. You're not good enough to be there. And that's basically what at a certain point in that movie, everybody tells Rudy that they're not even talking about football. They're just telling him, you are not smart enough to go to college. When was the last time, when was the last time you watched it completely?
Completely?
Yeah.
I would say last year, but I think the problem is in any other like time, last year would be like, oh yeah, last year. But you know, there's pre-COVID and post-COVID. So I think
oh my God.
My brain space just like went through, but I rewatched a couple of stuff. I rewatched the scene where he comes back home and Lily Tomlin starts dating someone else. And she didn't even like bother to call him. She's just like, I'm sorry, Rudy, it happened.
I hate to be that guy, but I wish Lily Tomlin was in the movie. It's Lily Taylor.
Thank you. Oh my God, not Lily Tomlin.
It would have been amazing if Lily Tomlin was Rudy's fiance at one point.
Like, I'm sorry, Rudy. Thank you, Lily Taylor.
20-year-old Sean Astin with
like
comedy Lily great Tomlin. Lily Tomlin as his fiance. I'd watch that movie.
Oh, I would watch that movie in a heartbeat as well. Thank you for correcting me, Lily Taylor. Yeah, where Lily Taylor is just like, I'm sorry, Rudy. Like now that I think of it, that's also like a decidedly American cast. Not to say that sports movies have like a problem with not casting like Americans as their big figures, but I remember looking up, I was like, oh, almost everyone is from the US.
I got something to say about that, but I want to let's make the Rudy thing. So his dad tells him, you know, like the privilege factor, like you can't make it. They're telling him he's dumb. I don't want to say he plays it dumb in the movie, but he's kind of like a simpleton, I guess. I don't even know if that's an appropriate word to use. Well,
I think also a part of it too, because I was just thinking about this, is that he's not super intelligent, but also he's not wildly athletic. It's not like,
right.
A good contrast is when they cast the late Chadwick Boseman in 42. You take
oh, forget
2 seconds
it.
Of looking at the guy, you're like, oh, of course he's going to be amazing with his like giant biceps and broad shoulders and like perfect demigod physique. Like, of course he's going to be good at everything he does.
Right. Super handsome. This guy's believable. Jackie Robinson. Yeah. Perfect casting.
Like you never doubt Chadwick Boseman being able to do things as Jackie Robinson. But when you see Sean Astin, you're just kind of like, I don't know. Like,
but that's the story, right? Like that's the story of Rudy. Yeah, he was like absolutely. 5'6", like nothing. And he was trying to play with the big boys. One of the fascinating aspects of the whole story is that like they concentrate on the fact that like he doesn't come from privilege. He comes from a working class family. He had to work to get into college. He's not that great at football, but his heart overpowers every single obstacle in his way. Now, I'll tell you my little Rudy story. I'm not a Rudy in any way. I am terrible at everything. So
I would say Nate, I would say you're fabulous at many things.
Thank you. I went to a Catholic high school, right? And every time there was like a sub who couldn't come in, or if there was like a break in class, or if we had, let's say we had like double period physics and the teacher couldn't make it, right? Mm-hmm. For some reason, the gym teacher in our school was also like kind of half in charge of like the AV stuff. So he'd wheel in the monitors into the classrooms and all that, right? Mm-hmm. Every time there was any kind of like lull, they would put Rudy on. it makes sense, you know? Very Catholic movie because of, you know, Notre Dame, he goes to Holy Cross Community College and all that stuff. But in high school, I got so sick of this movie because that's all.
Of course, like, I asked you to talk about it.
No, it's fine. I think it's hysterical. But like they would play it so often, like ad nauseum. And I got it. You know, like the first time I saw the movie, I was like, I get it, you know. But then after the 10th time sitting in a classroom. But the thing about that movie is when he gets picked up at the end of the movie, every single kid that I'd watch that movie with in the class would go banana. You know, like they loved
Rudy,
it.
Rudy, Rudy. Yeah.
They would get so into it. And I'd be like the weird like guy in the corner just being like, ah, F it, hate you, Rudy. Like, this is stupid. But I get it. As an adult, like watching it back, I'm like, you know what? I get it. Fun movie. Not the best movie. No. You know, great cast. Like weird cast connections too. Like John Favreau is in it. This is the movie where John Favreau met Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn's in it for like 2 minutes before he started devolving into like
Swingers, Vaughn and Favreau.
Right. Pre-Swinger. This is the impetus for them to make Swingers. And this is like, it's also made me think about like, people always say like, when did Vince Vaughn hit a wall? Like in terms of his looks. And I'm like, you know what? Arguably it started in Rudy. Like he started like devolving.
I don't think he's a bad looking guy.
No, he's not a bad looking
guy. And funny enough, he's in both movies or both featured movies today, Rudy and Fighting With My Family.
Exactly.
I also wonder like, my first thought was, oh, I feel like the character he plays in Rudy is like almost what he grows up to be in Fighting With My Family.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. So like he's in it. If you're an Exorcist fan, Father Karras is in the movie, John Miller, like the actor who played Father Karras in The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Like he's Coach Abe Parseghian in the movie. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, he's from Queens and so is John Favreau. Very interesting like connection there, you know.
You know what I think actually makes the movie Rudy more than anything is that soundtrack.
Jerry Goldsmith, man.
Jerry Goldsmith.
Jerry Goldsmith did. Sorry to cut you off. I got a lot of caffeine today. I apologize. He did the movie. I think he had a hand in doing the music for Hoosiers. And
that sounds right. I'll look that up, but that sounds right.
And I think he may have been nominated for an Academy Award, and that's why they got him to do the music for Rudy. Very interesting, though, when Rudy starts and you start hearing like the theme, it kind of sounds like the theme from The Shire. And it made me second guess like, wait, Jerry Goldsmith didn't do the Hobbit movies, the Lord of the Rings movies, did he?
No, that was James Horner, I think. Yeah. But you're right. He did Hoosiers. He also did the Rambo franchise. Okay.
Yeah. I think he did Total Recall. No, actually, no.
Yeah, he did. No, he did Total Recall. Yeah. And then one of his last films he did, it looks like, was The Lost World, Jurassic Park. But yeah, that's the one thing. It's not that the Fighting With My Family soundtrack is bad. It's just more kind of like there in the background. But I also think Florence Pugh is just a goddess, as always, in that movie. And Vince Vaughn's actually really, really good. I liked his character a lot. I also think they used a lot more visual storytelling in that movie, if that makes sense. So like the scene where she's in her room and she's having that, I don't know if I can do this moment. And literally every single WWE poster in her room is of a guy. And it's that very subtle messaging of, you know, she doesn't have any female heroes to look up to. So how does she look at someone and go, oh, if they did this, then I can do this.
Right. Well, I think that was maybe one of the, not subplots, but like that was certainly one of the points in the movie where she had to become her own hero. Mm-hmm. You know, and like get herself on the posters. Like Fighting With My Family is an interesting movie. I feel like they took Paige's story and then wrote a biopic of a person that didn't exist.
I've heard that a lot from like very hardcore. I've actually heard that very hardcore WWE fans don't like the movie also because of how they do the training isn't actually very true to how they train wrestlers in WWE. Like they can look at it and go, no, that's not that. No, they wouldn't let you do this if you weren't up to that level yet. So non-wrestlers actually like it a lot more than wrestlers or wrestling people.
Yeah. You know what? Like as a standalone flick, great. You know, honestly, like I think this might just come with age now where I can see Fighting With My Family. And if I had like a kid, like a 10-year-old or like, a, you know, between the ages of like seven and above, I'd be like, you know what? It was a great kids movie.
Good, agreed.
You know, good lessons.
Yeah. I actually told a couple of parents that when I used to teach Taekwondo, I would say, oh, maybe like when they're a little bit older, but especially if you have daughters, this is a great movie, especially because there is so much about kind of like what we were talking about with Rudy, actually, what a sports figure looks like. And Florence Pugh is not fat. Clearly she does not have a weight issue or isn't healthy or anything like that. But, you know, she's like a very normal looking pretty girl compared to all these like cheerleaders that are 5'10 and like don't have any ounce of body fat on them. And I thought like how it explored body image within sports was such an interesting thing to look at, especially from a female perspective.
I wish I could speak more on that, but I don't have a female perspective. you know.
That's okay. You have an enlightened, wonderful guy perspective.
I appreciate that. But I'm going to agree with you. And I want to further the point to that of, I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel like they acknowledge that difference very symmetrically. They didn't say, hey, you have to look like this, otherwise you're going to fail. And they didn't say, you don't have to look like anything. You know, it was very like, you can set out and do whatever you want to do as long as you put the work in, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I also did like the scene on the bus where they were, you think they're talking about Paige, mm-hmm. Florence Pugh's character, but then it turns out like they're talking about one of the girl's daughters and she mm-hmm. goes, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't know you had a daughter. And they go, yeah, because you never actually took the time to get to know us. So I right. thought it was very symmetric in that way too. Like, yes, they were kind of getting in her own way of succeeding, but then also she didn't take the time because of how they look to actually treat them like human beings.
It's very fascinating, you know, like, mm-hmm. and from my, this is going to sound very weird coming out of my mouth, but from my own experience too, me and my buddy Alex, who I'm doing Film Class Zeros with, the main people we hung out with in college was the girls' volleyball team. And these are all like 5'10", 6 foot tall mm-hmm. women, you know, athletic. They were fantastic. They're some of the funniest people I've ever met in college. We got to know them, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else who kind of came in contact with them, it was a different story, you know, like, and it was almost that like, well, you didn't take time to get to know us kind of thing, you know, where it was like very judgy and very like mislabeling just because of who these people, what these people look like, you know? So there's that perspective and they address it in the movie and I thought that was great, you know? But then it's like neat little package at the end, you know, with everybody.
Yeah, which I kind of think like with the exception of very few mm-hmm. movies such as, what's the one I was just thinking of? Oh, like Friday Night Lights where it's not the movie, I should say, not the TV show, where it's really not in any sort of neat package whatsoever. I feel that is somewhat inherent to the sports movie is that you do know what the ending's going to be because you go to a sports movie for that little neat package.
I do like that aspect of it. And, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm a positive guy and I like positive things, you know, like I would say I cry during 90% of movies. Even Rudy choked me up a little bit.
But, if you don't cry during Rudy, you're not a human.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's kind of, you know, Up, on a side note, Up didn't make me cry. But we could talk about that another time.
Ooh, that's our Patreon episode for November. Up, yeah, exactly. Is it good? Question mark?
So like, I think people love sports movies for that reason. One of those reasons mm-hmm. is you kind of get to live vicariously through these people. You know how it's going to end. You know it's going to, like, he's going to hit the home run. He's going to make the touchdown. He's going to do this and that, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, you're going to know where, like, these people end up or whatever. I think The Sandlot is a good example of, like, that's another kind of genre-bending movie where it's sports, it's a family movie, like, it's a great kids movie. I know, for example, like, my wife loves The Sandlot. Mm-hmm. I've seen it a few times. Great. But that movie does have that neat little package ending, and you're like, oh, this kid ended up doing this. This kid ended up doing that. And it's a feel-good kind of movie, you know?
Yeah, I feel like A League of Their Own is exactly like that after. There is some not neat stuff. Like, if I'm remembering correctly, I'll just look it up on Wikipedia real quick, but if I'm correct, Gina Davis's husband leaves her because she starts spending too much time playing baseball and like basically being her own woman, and he's in the army and kind of expects like a very stay-at-home wife. Because I remember there was like an overall happy ending, but then some of them also went through the personal stuff, and my first thought was Gina Davis's husband leaves her.
A League of Their Own, I've only seen A League of Their Own once, and I think I rented it on VHS in like the mid-90s. but the only thing I remember from League of Their Own is Tom Hanks.
Aw, Tom Hanks. Yeah, that actually has a really all-star cast that everyone forgets about. Madonna, David Straven is in it. Mm. Bill Pullman plays Gina Davis's husband. And
Penny Marshall director.
Yeah, I was about to say Penny Marshall's in it as well. It's Rosie O'Donnell. It's like a very heavy hitter cast, but I would say because of the there's no crying in baseball scene, 99% of people wouldn't be able to name like anyone else in the cast except Tom Hanks.
Oh, forget it. Like, all right. So that's another good example of like, when you think of one-liners from sports movies, two come to mind. One, there's no crying in baseball. to If You Build It, They Will Come, Field of Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need, it's a very interesting, like sports movies are very interesting in that regard. You know, like it really, like the, you have to unpack the layers of the feel good quality of what makes a good sports movie. I would consider A League of Their Own a fun and good sports movie. You know, I think in the last few years, my pick would be 42. Like, I love 42. I think 42 is fantastic.
Such a good movie. I remember seeing that on a plane, I remember seeing that thinking, first of all, he's going to be a star. He's clearly going to be a star. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And
yeah.
I also liked how much they showed the struggle with not just, like, playing the sport, but also mm-hmm. as a man of color in a predominantly white sport, figuring out how he, like, represented his community, but also mm-hmm. kind of stayed true to all the shit that was being tossed at him.
It was very topical. And I think, like, the movie, they did a good job with the movie. I really enjoy it. I think they addressed so many issues that were still current at the time, mm-hmm. you know? And even if you watch it now, it's another one of those sports movies that if you can keep unpacking the layers of that movie and everybody's performance in the movie, I think everybody did a standout job. The cast is amazing. Chadwick Boseman, phenomenal job as Jackie Robinson. I think one of the out of nowhere casting choices was Harrison Ford as Branch Rickey, who helped break the color barrier. You know, you're like instrumental in breaking the color barrier in baseball, you know,
yeah.
And Harrison Ford just delivering on that level, you know, after being a veteran in the industry, fantastic. You had Alan Tudyk, you had,
Remember, and I know this is dating me a little bit, but Ryan Merriman, who was in a bunch of Disney films, he was in like the 13th Year and The Luck of the Irish. He was like the Disney Channel pretty boy, plays the baseball, like one of the only baseball players that actually treats Jackie Robinson like a human being, and he was really good in it as well.
42 is probably my pick for like most modern very good sports movie, and I'll throw Creed in there also. I think we watched Creed together, right?
Oh yeah, we watched Creed together. Yeah. And that movie was freaking, I don't even know like specifically what made it so good. I mean, first of all, I love Philly. I really just love the city of Philly. I think the people are great. I feel like the town is really fun. But I love that it felt very grounded in the place it was in. And I feel like that's what made Creed as great as Rocky, is that Rocky felt very grounded in its location and what the location is in real life. And I feel like Creed did a pretty good job of that as well.
Very believable. I think Creed was, I mean, like the least believable aspect of Creed was him being Apollo's son. You know, because it was
absolutely.
Like, that was like the MacGuffin that they had. They built the movie around. And you know what? It's fine. They got there, whatever. Who cares about the DNA in the movie? But the story that they wanted to tell, I think, outweighed like the box that they were in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I don't think I phrased that correctly, but like the story, the weight of the story itself was better than whatever dumb device they could come up with to have this guy be Apollo Creed's son.
You know? Yeah, like all the good stuff in that movie outweighed the kind of, I don't want to say ridiculous MacGuffin, but the, oh, come on now, MacGuffin. Right. And I feel like it's weirdly kind of like Midnight in Paris. It's one of those movies where you either buy into the thing or you don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And Creed is such a fun ride. I haven't seen Creed 2 yet.
Neither have I, but I'd be really interested to see it because they, as Drogo's son or Drogo's protege, they hired like an actual heavyweight champion to fight Michael B. Jordan. But yeah, I'd be really interested. Lord knows we have more time on our hands, seemingly. So I'd be really interested to check out Creed 2 and see how that compares to the first one, or the first Creed, I should say.
Oh, forget it. I feel like it's good. We should watch it over the internet. We could do like a watch along.
Hell yeah. Love that idea. Creed 2 watch party would
Let's
be
do really it.
Thing.
You I'd be into it.
Movie I also just thought of, which I feel like is, again, it falls into that weird border of sports movie and fighting movie that I think is super underrated, is Girl Fight. It was Michelle Rodriguez's like very first movie, and she plays a girl living in New York City that discovers the underground boxing scene and trains and gets like really good. And I haven't seen that movie in a while, but it was like early 90s, back in the kind of gritty Sundance days. And that's a really good one if you can find it, Girl Fight by Karen Kusama.
I'm going to check that out. I vaguely remember this. I am looking it up right now, and it's very familiar. And yeah, you're right. This was like, I think, the movie that put Michelle Rodriguez on the map, right?
You know what I realize we need to talk about, because I am a girl in her late 20s, is in Bend It Like Beckham.
You talk to me about Bend It Like Beckham.
Wait, you've never seen Bend It Like Beckham?
No, I've seen it. I don't have good recall for Bend It Like Beckham.
I remember, and this is going to be very middle school girl, but I remember loving Bend It Like Beckham because one of the lead girls was super flat-chested.
Okay.
He looks like me. But I have always really loved that movie. I loved it when I first saw it with my mom. I loved it when I rewatched it like 5 years ago. And I think I even recently rewatched it pre-COVID, but within the last year or two. And I thought it was so interesting how much, and Fighting With My Family kind of does this, how they deal with the family's expectations of someone versus her love of the sport.
Okay.
I mean, Fighting With My Family, it's a lot more, it's not as in contrast with her desire to do wrestling. There is a little bit of like, no pressure, but your family will be much more financially well off if you become a successful wrestler. But with Bend It Like Beckham, there's a lot more, what do you mean you show your bare legs to strangers? There's a line in the movie like that. Or what do you mean you're going to miss your sister's wedding for a big game or something like that? Yeah, I just thought like the struggle for her literally just to physically play soccer because of her family's expectations, I thought were really, really interesting. And Creed kind of plays with family expectations too.
Yeah, I think maybe that could be another layer of the sport movie. The expectations that are put on the main characters. 42 had it, Creed had it, League of Their Own had it, Rudy has it, Fighting With My Family has it, Bend It Like Beckham. Would you consider Bend It Like Beckham a sports movie?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sure, right?
Okay. I only saw Bend It Like Beckham, I think on TV, like when it came to network. So figure like early 2000s. I've seen it maybe 1.5 times. I think you're thinking of Keira Knightley.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Keira Knightley, because that was also Keira Knightley when she was really young. Like, she couldn't have been older than 19, 20 or something like that.
Probably, if not younger than that, because right after, I want to say she was younger than that, because I think the next big thing she was in was the Pirates movies.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And that was like a few years later. Side note, this guy loves those Pirates movies.
I haven't seen all of the Pirates movies, but Pirates and National Treasure are two of my go-to, like, I want to watch something exciting and fun without, like, too much investment because I know everything that's going to happen, or basically the early aughts Jerry Bruckheimer films. I feel like that could be another episode. Early aughts Jerry Bruckheimer films.
Yeah, talk to me about Con Air. I love Con Air.
Talk to me about Coyote Ugly, which is his weird one-off.
So Bend It Like Beckham is, you know, like the family pressure you have in Bend It Like Beckham is very much like the expectations of, you know, I think she was a Sikh, right? If I'm not wrong about that. Like,
dad was a Sikh, yes.
Okay. So you have like that kind of predetermination of what a female is supposed to do in that culture. And then in Fighting With My Family, it wasn't so much that, oh, you want to be a wrestler, you can't be a wrestler. It was, you're a great wrestler, but your brother's going to be the star because this is a male-dominated industry. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was a nice conflict there where it shows that he wasn't picked in the tryout and she was picked in the tryout.
I thought that whole storyline was so interesting because I feel like you don't see a lot of that in not just sports movies, but like the success movies where, you know, someone becomes a star of some kind. Mm-hmm. The other person who is going on that journey with them but just doesn't get to, and how they found happiness and peace within themselves. I thought that was a really important, is a big word, but I feel like there are so many people like that, you know, having been in the acting world for a very long time, you see those people that try and try, and it's not a question of talent or anything, but whether they like it or not, like Vince Vaughn says in the movie, like, you're the journeyman and there's no way you're going to change that.
Right. Like, you're a good hand, but you've already hit your ceiling and that's it. Right. I enjoyed Fighting With My Family. It's, again, I would watch it again. I would say it's on the better end of a sports movie because it's so niche, you know, like you don't really get too many movies about pro wrestling.
Yeah, you really don't. And I feel like I don't know if this was a choice of the filmmakers, and just for context, listeners, WWE did produce it, but then the writer, director, Stephen Merchant is British. Right. So I don't want to say, oh, there's a cultural difference, but I think there was maybe a little more like, let's kind of take away some of the specifics of wrestling. So that way it does feel a little more approachable for a non-wrestling audience, because, and I don't think this is okay necessarily, but I do feel like as someone who has watched WrestleMania with you, learned a little bit more about the wrestling world, I feel like for a lot of people, there's this like, oh, I don't know wrestling. Like, it's really weird. I don't want to approach it. I feel like it's really toxic or bad or something.
It's a turnoff for most people.
I think. It's a turnoff.
It's a huge turnoff.
For whatever reason. I don't know.
It's usually, because like I've been doing that Mat Men podcast for so long, and also like my friends and family know I'm into wrestling and all that stuff, but it's also like I'm not gonna convince anybody to try to watch wrestling, you know, like on my own personal level, because I have found for the entirety of my fandom, it's a turnoff for most people, unless by some kind of magic they see a live show somewhere and are like, oh, I get it. You know, I think that's if you really like, I think it's like a party atmosphere. If there's like the creation of that party atmosphere and you really are like, what's going on now? What's going on now? There's been so many people that would come over to my place for these WrestleMania parties, and a handful of them would be like the significant others who are just coming to have a party and drinks and all that. But then they'd end up on the couch just being like, I never knew it was like this. This is crazy, you know? And they kind of get hooked after that. So that's the interesting aspect of it. But you can't, that would be a whole separate movie as opposed to how Stephen Merchant wrote this film, which had an outstanding cast. You had, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, Lena Headey?
I think it's Headey.
It's Headey.
Okay. There is discussion whether it's Headey or Headey. Most people honestly just say Cersei Lannister.
Right.
It's like, Cersei Lannister was great in it.
Nick Frost, Lena, Cersei Lannister, Vince Vaughn's in it, and Florence Pugh is fantastic. You know, like she's so great. And this is early career too. You know, like Midsummer, Fighting With My Family, two great flicks.
The trifecta of 2019. Yeah. Florence Pugh, Little Women, Midsommar, and Fighting With My Family.
Yeah, and you know, like Midsommar is such a weird, fantastic movie, and this is also a weird, fantastic movie, and Little Women is like a weird period piece, you know? She's great in this one. She played an excellent Paige. I don't think there was anybody else who could have played her in this movie. Everybody else, and like, you know, Nick Frost as the dad and Lena Headey as the mom, also perfect casting choices. I think everything else in the movie was superfluous to those casting choices.
You know, oh yeah, and Jack Loudon, who plays the brother, is really good too.
Oh yeah, he's fantastic. So Fighting With My Family, like we were saying, interesting fit, great flick, really good sports movie in the regard of like you're really cheering for the main character. I want to touch on something kind of interesting too, because the movie was produced by The Rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
So The Rock, for people who don't know, was a former pro wrestler. He may show up at some point here and there, but he's made his career over the last 10 years being the biggest movie star in the world. And this dude has made so many friggin' sports movies that I feel like he's made more sports movies than any other actor, right? Like I'm looking at his filmography, and it starts with Gridiron Gang. Rock has made Gridiron Gang. He's made Game Plan. I think the Tooth Fairy also, because he was. He played sports in that. And then you had Pain and Gain, which is kind of, I would say it's a sports movie. It's about like bodybuilding. He was a bodybuilder.
It's sports-like.
Sports-like. Ballers, which is fantastic on HBO. 6 seasons of Ballers where he's a sports agent, you know?
I feel like Ballers is that one HBO show that, I don't want to say no one watches it, but it's one of those shows that you forget is still a thing. And then when someone says, oh, you have to watch Ballers, it's so great. Because I feel like every Zoom call I've ever gone on, it's introduce yourself, where you're from, and what show are you binging right now? And at least one person in every Zoom call or every other Zoom call, it's like, oh, I'm watching Ballers. It's so great.
You know what's funny about Ballers? I really don't want to. I'm on that bandwagon, but I don't want to express that I'm on that bandwagon too hard. But it is so edible. That show is crazy edible.
Like, well, it's got John David Washington in it too, right? He plays like the quarterback he represents.
He's awesome. Like, he's so good on the show. Rock is good. Rob Corddry's awesome on it. It's one of those like very bite-sized. I would pitch that show to anybody who's really not into sports, but likes something that is tangentially related to sports, that doesn't get too crazy with it, that's funny, well-made, well-written, well-shot. You know, it's so bite-sized, half-an-hour episodes. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, I binge-watched every season except for the last one. Just like, this is...
Wow.
And I kept turning around to Vicky, my wife. She used to QC shows for HBO, like years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. So she QC'd most of Ballers at some point, and I would just be eating my cereal in the morning and being like, this is so great. You ever see this? And she's like, yeah, I watched them all. And I'm like, oh, it's so good. Look, check this out. It's The Rock. It's The Rock.
Oh, if we're talking about sports TV shows for a second, we have to take a moment for Glow. RIP Glow, bring back Glow. If not in the whole like season, at least a 2-hour movie finale.
Oh my God. I would love Glow to come back. It was awesome. It was awesome. That's, you know what? That's how you get people into pro wrestling. You forget Fighting With My Family or any other pro wrestling movie that's out there. Put on Glow and tell me you won't be addicted to it after the first 2 episodes.
Agreed. I also feel like it was such a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. I also feel like it's a really sad note to leave Alison Brie's character on, who's basically like hanging on to a dream that clearly needs changing or refreshing or zhuzhing, and comparing her to Betty Gilpin's character, who is kind of like finding herself and finding her new groove and gaining her power, and Ruth is just like so mired in what she wishes her life would be. Like, I don't want her to end on that.
I do think I'm going to make 2 points here. I do think it's going to come back in some form. You're going to get that finale. Maybe it'll be a couple of years from now, but it's going to happen. Number two, you use the word zhuzh. Question for you. How do you spell zhuzh?
That'll be fun. Give me a whole Patreon episode. How do you spell zhuzh? I spell it, the way I see it in my head, G-U-U-G-E.
Wow. Okay.
Zhuzh.
G-U-U-G-E. If I saw that written down, I'd say googe. But
give it a googe.
We were out of town a couple of weeks ago, and there was a barbershop. I shouldn't say barbershop. There was a salon. There's a salon. And we walked by it, and the letters said J-O-O-J. And I was like, huh, zhuzh. Interesting.
J? I would say juge. Or like,
okay.
Juge.
Juge.
Juge. Give it a juge.
I think it's a combination of both. It might be J-O-O-G-E.
It could also just be one of those words that like you can't spell because it's such onomatopoeia that no one actually thought about how to spell it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Very smart.
Wow, we've gone from sports movies to judging.
Gotta keep people entertained.
Gotta just keep them on their feet. Are there any sports movies we haven't talked about that you should think we should talk about?
Ooh, I could talk to you, like how you said you can talk to me for 5 days about Midsommar. I could probably talk to you for 5 days about Rocky, like the first Rocky movie and the Rocky character. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to, I feel like it's too much to get into. Any Given Sunday. Really, really.
Oh.
That was in my notes too. So I remember, like I was telling you at the beginning of the show, I'm not Joe America quarterback. You know, but I remember seeing Any Given Sunday in 1999 in the movie theater and being completely blown away by it, right? Mm-hmm. And I've seen it a couple of times since then. And I do think that's a sports movie that's worth another watch. Oliver Stone directed it. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
I would say check out Any Given Sunday. I'm going to read the cast here a little bit. Directed by Oliver Stone. Al Pacino, Cameron Diaz, Dennis Quaid, James Woods, Jamie Foxx, LL Cool J, Matthew Modine, Charlton Heston, Anne Margaret, Aaron Eckhart, and John McGinley. Like,
What?
The cast in this movie
stacked.
Is completely bonkers. I remember really, really enjoying the movie. It's a really interesting look at football and kind of like the drama that comes with it. Lawrence Taylor shows up at some point. Jim Brown shows up at some point. Elizabeth Berkeley shows up at some point. It's a really stacked flick. Mm-hmm. And I think that fits into like kind of almost like a forgotten sports movie because I've never really heard people talk about it. You know?
Oh, it's so funny that you mentioned that because, first of all, I feel like the one time you hear it in popular culture is in Kanye West's Gold Digger.
Yes.
Like you can see her at the foot of something any given Sunday, blah, 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 blah. But yeah. The other film, I don't know if it's forgotten as much as it's, I don't know if like it just didn't get enough press or enough good reviews by certain people or something, but it kind of went under the radar, but is really good. It's called The Program. And it's a film from 2015 that is about the Lance Armstrong Team US Postal USPS doping scandal.
Ooh, I have not seen that.
It was really interesting because my dad was a semi-pro cyclist for most of my childhood, and we actually watched it together. And it was really interesting to hear him say in terms of what doping you would use and how you would do it and, you know, like what cyclists worry about in terms of like their longevity and stuff. He goes, yep, that's true.
Wow.
So in terms of like there's a scene where Ben Foster, who plays Lance Armstrong, basically goes to the doctor that encourages him to do doping.
Oh, wow.
And he starts talking about how the less fat you have on your body, the better you'll do because you can climb up hills quickly.
Okay.
And my dad was like, yep, that's true. That's wow. Right. And also, I forget if they mentioned this in the movie or not. I feel like they did allude to it at some point because of especially male cyclists, like trying to get their weight down to excessive amounts. Cyclists, pro cyclists actually have a lot of heart problems because their heart has had to overwork for so long.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, The Program's really great. Jesse Plemons is in it and he is unbelievable. He's so good. This is also a stacked cast. It's Ben Foster, Chris O'Dowd, Guillaume Canet, Jesse Plemons, Lee Pace, Dustin Hoffman, Laura Donnelly, and there's one other name I'm seeing. Oh yeah, Josh O'Connor, like pre, if I'm correct, Once Upon a Time Josh O'Connor.
Yes.
Oh no, pre the crown Josh O'Connor, and directed by Stephen Frears as well, who I believe did The Queen.
Very cool. I love Chris O'Dowd. Also, I think Jesse Plemons falls into the category of super obscure actor that is amazing.
He's also that guy that is just in all the things. Like he was in The Irishman. Yeah. He was in I'm Thinking of Ending Things. He was in Fargo. He was in The Program. He was in Game Night. He was in Breaking Bad. Like he's just now that guy that's in all the things for whatever reason.
Super solid actor.
Oh, he's so good.
And all the stuff. I have two actors that I love that are on that list of obscure but amazing. Clancy Brown and Jeffrey Wright. Amazing. They're in a lot of stuff, but I don't think comparatively nobody knows who they are. It's funny that you mentioned The Program because there is a 1993. I thought you were going to talk about the 1993 football movie called The Program with James Caan, which is not a great sports movie.
Oh, interesting.
So it kind of goes full circle in that regard. Because in 1993, you had The Program, not that great, and you also had Rudy in 1993.
That's so interesting. I also kind of feel like, because I just realized this when going over our list, it feels really easy to come up with like a football or maybe a baseball movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's plenty of other sports where it's either there's just no movie about it or the sport itself, like cycling, is kind of in the background, or gymnastics. Like, I feel like gymnastics hasn't had its great, like, sports movie, if that makes any sense.
I'll agree with that. Gymnastics is tough. I think, like, you'll have the genre is so interesting in that, like, let's say you had Hoosiers, which is a basketball movie, and then you don't really have too many basketball movies that really stick out. Like, I mean, White Men Can't Jump, does that count as a basketball movie? Does Hoop Dreams count as a basket, like a really amazing basketball movie? The Air Up There, that's another.
Yeah. Or what's the other one? Coach Carter. Is that more of like a teacher, like inspirational teacher movie, or is that more of a basketball movie?
Air Bud.
Classic, iconic. You can't talk about sports movies without talking about Air Bud. Space Jam, another great basketball movie.
Baseball flicks, there are a dime a dozen. Football flicks are a dime a dozen. But then you have like the Bennett like Beckham's, The Program, the 2015, The Program about cycling. I'm sure they're out there, but they're not going to get as much attention as, let's say, like a really amazing football movie or TV show. I feel like there's definitely probably like an amazing movie about like badminton or cricket.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there is. Or golf.
Curling. Golf or curling. Oh, there's lots of great golf. Well, there's lots of great golf movies.
Really? You know,
Legend of Bagger Vance.
Oh, that is a golf movie. I was only thinking of the Shia LaBeouf one.
Happy Gilmore.
Caddyshack. But I also feel like that's another movie where like the sport is kind of the background for all the shenanigans that are happening. Like Bill Murray could be able to go for on any field. It didn't have to be a golf field. He could have been anywhere.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And then you had Miracle about hockey. I think that was with Kurt Russell about the, yes. I say the 1980 hockey team.
Is it 80 or 84? I have a weird feeling.
Yeah, Miracle. It was about the 1984.
Oh, I got it mixed up because it came out in 2004, but it was, you're right. It's about the 1980 Olympics.
Right. Mighty Ducks.
Oh, I haven't watched that one in a very long time.
There's like a lot of, you know, like Slapshot, arguably the greatest hockey movie of all time. 1977, Paul Newman.
Wait, Paul Newman was in a hockey movie and I had no idea about this?
Yeah. Are you a big Paul Newman fan?
Love Paul Newman. R.A.P. Paul Newman. Even like up to his very old age, I was like, I'm still into him. I don't care how old he is. I'm into him.
He's very charming. I feel like there's a certain amount of Americana charm that comes with Paul Newman that's very, very underestimated in today's cinema, you know?
Agreed. I feel like he also really had that like very specifically American star quality, for lack of a better word.
I think if you took out all the negative qualities of Steve McQueen and added like a whole lot more charm, you got Paul Newman.
I agree with that. I don't dislike Steve McQueen, but I agree with that.
Very rough. Like Steve McQueen, very rough guy, rough around the edges, like man's man, you know? If you remove that aggression, a lot of the aggression, and put in a big dose of charm, Paul Newman, you know?
Yeah, like, I fully agree with that.
Butch and Sundance, Cool Hand Luke, The Sting, The Hustler, like Color of Money, like he was an odd favorite. He's probably also my favorite actor from that era. As opposed to like a Robert Redford or like, like that style, like a Richard Gere, I feel like has always tried to be like Paul Newman, you know?
Yeah. But I feel like around the Chicago era, he found his own thing. You know what I mean? Wait, I feel like Paul Newman was in another sports movie and I'm blanking on it. I'm going to Google it. Paul Newman sports movies. Cause I feel like Slapshot. Oh, interesting. So some people count The Hustler as a sports movie. It is about pool. Yay or nay?
I'll say yay because it's hard to quantify what makes a sport, but I feel like if you're having a competition on a national level at some point, like definitely. Like, I would say pool is a sport, but by that definition, would you consider poker a sport? Because pool is arguably is a little more physical than like the World Series of Poker, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I would almost put poker on the same playing field as like chess. So like the Queen's Gambit, which is a series that just came out, like is chess a sport? And I feel like, and granted there is thought that goes into football plays and basketball plays and, you know, wrestling matches and things like that. I do think the amount of physical to the amount of mental that you have to have going on. First, it determines whether it's a sport or more of like a game.
Okay.
That makes sense. So like, I wouldn't consider chess movies sports movies, but I would consider like ballet movies or a lot of dance movies. Like there's this great documentary called Step, which is about an all girls step dance team in Baltimore. I would kind of consider that a sports-like movie because they have to practice and there's weird team dynamics going on and there's the big competition at the end. I feel like that's another big thing with sports movies is that there's always a big competition in like the last half hour of the third act.
There's always that big crescendo at the end of the movie where you're like, oh, he's gonna, you know, even Teen Wolf 1 and Teen Wolf 2, is he gonna do it? Mm-hmm. You know?
Or even if you wanna like consider it a sports movie, Bring It On. There's the big cheer match at the end.
Yeah. Would you consider, no, Perfect Pitch was not. A chair movie. Now, Bring It On's a good example. I'm going to go back to Rudy for a second too, because the interesting thing with Rudy is that like he didn't win anything,
no.
Right? Like his whole thing was he wanted to come out of the tunnel at Notre Dame with the rest of the team. He wanted to dress with the team. He wanted to be involved in one, like all the guy got was one play in the game, pretty much, right? And legit, mm-hmm. I think real life too, like he was involved in like one play after Notre Dame had beat Georgia Tech, like tremendously, you know, like the game was over. Rudy got carried off the field because of his heart, you know? So it wasn't like they won everything, you know, mm-hmm. They already won. It was just like the feel good story of like this kid, you know, like this guy. And it's also kind of interesting too, because like, when you look back at that movie, if the tone of the movie was different, the character of Rudy would have been a psycho. Because he's
you're so right. He would have been like delusional about the fact that he's not the best player, but he's not like incredibly into, like he yeah. would be seen as, it would be more of a like ambition at what cost sort of movie.
I think it would be, if the tone was slightly different, it could have been like an incel. Like he was like some kind of like weird incel who was blaming everybody for his problems and who was just like, I'm obsessed with this and I need to do this and you don't understand. Like that
that's
kind
the dark, gritty HBO 2020 remake of Rudy.
Oh, forget. I think if this movie was remade now, it would be way more dramatic. And I feel like there, like so many creative liberties would have been taken.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
He would have won the Super Bowl if it was made in 2020. Like
but
a
again,
Michael
it'd be
Bay.
Like the Super Bowl at what cost?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground. Mr. Stambolian, do you have any last words you want to say?
Oh, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. I'm excited to hear more episodes of Girl Presses Play. And I hope to be back on if you'll have me. If I didn't do too terrible a job.
No, you did a wonderful job. I would love to have you back on again. And this was a super fun conversation. Fun. And I will see you next time, sir.
Yeah,
oh, where can the lovely listeners follow you on the socials?
My primary social media handle is at BTCRich on Twitter. If you're going to come and find me and hang out with me, that's pretty much it. Like I tweet about comic books and movies and pro wrestling and all that fun stuff, video games too. Nothing heavy on my Twitter feed. It's just stuff that I like. So come find me there.
Yay. Thank you so much for coming on and hope you have a wonderful, happy and safe Thanksgiving. Eat a lot of food, either watch a lot of sports or watch a lot of sports movies.
Well, I'm thankful for you. So happy Thanksgiving.
I'm thankful that you came onto the show. Among many other things, I'm very thankful that you came onto the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me again. I appreciate
it. Thank you. And that is our show. I hope you all enjoyed that discussion. I think we all learned a few things today. I know I did. And that is, when you think you remember the movie, you probably don't. Especially if, like Rudy, you watched it before quarantine. So, yeah, just double check those movies, guys. Rewatch them. We got plenty of time on our hands. Thanks again to Rich Stambolian for stopping by. And thank you all for listening. I hope you all have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving holiday, whether you'll be celebrating with loved ones in person or over Zoom or Google Hangouts or some sort of video chat this year. I know I'm very thankful to have you folks who listen to the podcast every week. For me, doing this podcast has been a really big way of just getting through the craziness of the times. And you wonderful listeners have made doing this podcast an even better experience. So I'm really happy about that and thankful for you folks. Thanks again, and we will see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back every Tuesday for new episodes, and be sure to check us out on our Patreon page, where you can support the show and get some really cool exclusive stuff for doing it. A very special thanks to our Patreon supporters, John F., Variolo Fencing, LLC, and Helen Rafferty. For news on upcoming episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Girl Presses Play. The show is written, produced, and hosted by Alana Rafferty. Intro music is composed by Asha Iwanowitz, and our logo design is by Mark Sauve. Thanks again. See you next time. Girl Presses Play.